now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Just plain old Thursday?
Yes. I think so.
Yes, let's move things along.
Yes. I don't want to digress too much into what day it is. Yeah.
I don't know. John looks forward to it, and I've acclimated too. It just gets me started on the right foot. But
I'm sure there's something, but nothing's popping up.
You know what? I'll look it up later. All right, Adam, let's get started. We have a lot of grounds to cover, as always. Let's start out with our first keyword pick of the day.
Yoon Kishida talks.
So President Yoon Sung-yeol has spoken over the phone with the Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, who had recently visited the U.S. He sat down with, of course, the Filipino representative and U.S. counterpart, and it was a trilateral summit over there, too. And then he wanted to catch up with President Yoon. This is after, of course, the Dokdo Islet troubles resurfaced. Mm. What did they discuss?
Yeah, so it was interesting to see that the Japanese Prime Minister, who actually initiated this phone call, kind of gave a post-mortem of his trip to the US. Right. So it kind of goes to show that certainly the relations between Korea and Japan are improving, despite those underlying, you know, territorial and historical issues still being there. Now, the call lasted for about 15 minutes, starting at 7 p.m. During their conversation, President Yoon highlighted the importance of cooperation between Korea, Japan, and the U.S., especially given the growing instability in the Korean Peninsula and the Indo-Pacific region. And he emphasized that this cooperation is crucial for promoting peace and prosperity in the area. Kishida discussed his recent visit to the U.S. and the advancements in U.S.-Japan relations, of course, because they are trying to promote this trilateral cooperation between them. It's only fitting that Kishida does kind of debrief President Yoon, if you will, of his trip and the relations between the U.S. and Japan. Now, he vowed to further strengthen the partnership with Seoul as well and to continue addressing various global challenges together. Building on the strong coordination with Washington, both leaders exchanged views on their strategies towards North Korea as well. They agreed to enhance their close collaboration on issues related to North Korea through both bilateral and trilateral frameworks. They also agreed to continue their robust communication and cooperation, building on the solid trust and positive momentum that had been established through 7 summits last year. This call was the first interaction between the two leaders after the ruling party lost in the general elections. Kyodo News assessed that Kishida's initiative to make this call was seen as an effort to maintain a cooperative relationship with Yoon. It does come very shortly after those tensions regarding Dokdo, but on the grand scheme of things, cooperation and relations have somewhat improved between the two.
All right, let's move on to the economy section for the next two keywords. This is our second keyword of the day.
Weaker one concern.
So the finance chiefs of South Korea and the United States and Japan have held their first trilateral talks in Washington. They've expressed concerns over the weakening Korean won and Japanese yen. What came out of this meeting? Can we tame the rampant currency volatility?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? Yeah. This gathering was a continuation of the trilateral cooperation discussed at last year's summit in Camp David. Choi Sang-mok, Janet Yellen, and Shinichi Suzuki adopted a joint statement emphasizing the expansion of cooperation between the bilateral frameworks of South Korea, U.S., and South Korea, Japan to a trilateral level. The meeting focused on the recent economic and financial issues, particularly the depreciation of the won and the yen. These currencies have hit low levels, record low levels at some points as well, due to the delay in expected U.S. interest rate cuts and growing instability, of course, in the Middle East. Now, the ministers discussed the volatility in the forex market and agreed on the need for potential coordinated intervention. The joint statement noted that they will continue to cooperate to promote sustainable economic growth, financial stability, as well as orderly and well-functioning financial markets. Now, another key topic was China's impact on global global economics. The discussion, although not directly naming China, is understood to be aimed at Chinese industrial policies following recent discussions by Yellen during her recent visit to China. The ministers agreed to continue practical discussions and develop cooperation strategies to tackle vulnerabilities in supply chains and address the economic impacts of non-market practices by other countries. That's a kind of a reference to China, not by name specifically. Now, on the geopolitical front, the three shared updates on their respective sanctions against North Korea and Russia and discussed further strengthening their cooperation to address these challenges while calling on North Korea to return to talks and urging Russia not to engage in military cooperation with North Korea. Now, to better respond to key global challenges, they said they'll work together to evolve the multilateral development banks and strengthen other international financial institutions as well.
All right, staying on the economy section, can the South Korean financial authorities put their heads together to stabilize markets amid uncertainties? That's the key word. Our third pick of the day.
Economy strained.
More so than before. I feel like this has been the theme since the pandemic, frankly. Korea's economy is facing challenges due to longstanding high inflation and interest rates compounded by a recent sharp increase in exchange rates. The finance chiefs of Korea and Japan particularly met separately for the first time to discuss the very issue.
Right. So the two ministers exchanged their views on issues, including the current global economy and the ways to strengthen bilateral and multilateral cooperation. Of course, the weakening of the Korean-Japanese currencies has caused concern as the Korean government attempts to leverage the semiconductor industry to stimulate domestic recovery. However, of course, the sudden rise in exchange rates is posing a significant risk to the broader economy. Choi and Suzuki shared their concerns about the rapid devaluation of the currencies. They agreed on the necessity to take appropriate actions to stabilize the forex market. They also vowed to cooperate for the economic development of both countries on a grander scale as well. They stated that they were closely monitoring exchange rate movements and foreign exchange liquidity. The recent improvement in trade balance, primarily driven by the chip sector, is seen as a potential buffer against future exchange rate escalations. High exchange rates can make exports more competitive by lowering their prices on international markets, which could help improve the trade balance. However, the prevailing strong dollar trend, intensified by this ongoing conflict between Israel and Iran, suggests that high exchange rates may persist. This can increase the cost of imported goods, such as energy, and negatively impact the trade balance as well. Now, the government is particularly concerned as this new challenge of a high exchange rate joins existing issues of course, high inflation and interest rates, potentially exacerbating the already rising prices of goods, especially such as fruits and vegetables, which have simply just skyrocketed lately, and it's getting more expensive to eat.
Adding more to that economic pressure. So we weren't getting a break, but it's just worsening as we speak. So how can financial authorities intervene? We'll wait and see. Our fourth keyword of the day.
Medical reform.
It feels like we've been talking about this for weeks on end, and it's because we have been talking about it on weeks on end with really no quick resolution in sight. After the ruling party's defeat in the general election, tensions between the government and medical professionals persist because there was a slight sort of expectation that things may ease and we'll look at the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, but there is no sign of a resolution. What's the latest?
Yeah, we thought there might be a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's getting dimmer by the day. So expectations have certainly been squashed. Now, the government did maintain its commitment to medical reform in its first public statement since the election that came earlier this week. Now, this announcement came during a meeting of the Central Disaster and Safety Countermeasure Headquarters. There, Health Minister Cho Kyu-hong emphasized the importance of increasing medical school admissions once again to improve essential and regional healthcare services. The minister repeated calls for doctors as well to stop their collective action and engage in dialogue. He also urged the medical community to present a unified science-backed alternative to the med school quota increase, comments that have been made by the government before. So again, doubling down on those. Now, the government will also begin education for physician assistants from today as well. But it is being met with some backlash. Trainee doctors are pushing back by filing a lawsuit against the Vice Health Minister Pang Min-soo, accusing him of abusing his power by preventing doctors from resigning and forcing them to work involuntarily. They said they will not return to work unless Park is dismissed and their demands are met, reinforcing their demand for the complete revocation of the medical school expansion plan. Meanwhile, civil and patient advocacy groups have criticized the collective actions of doctors, particularly their impact on emergency and critical care. They are urging the government and parliament to take immediate steps to ensure essential medical services are not disrupted. There were expectations that maybe the government might soften its stance a little bit, especially after the ruling party's defeat in the general elections. There were kind of some hints and comments by the government, maybe suggesting that was a direction it was taking. But with the latest meeting of the government and the health minister, it doesn't seem to be so. So they're still pretty adamant on not just medical reform, but other reforms as well. But in this particular case, they're still doubling down on their will to increase the medical school quota.
All right. So the deadlock between the government and the medical community continues even after the general election. We'll leave it there for now so we can move on to our final keyword of the day.
Birth rates rebound?
There's a question mark.
Yeah.
Take it with a grain of salt, but it could imply a slight silver lining, if you will, like a really faint one at that. A recent survey shows that a growing number of young Koreans are considering having children. Considering being a keyword, thinking and doing are two very different things. They're cautiously raising hopes that the nation's low birth rate could start to rebound. Tell us more.
Yeah, so again, this is keep expectations in check, of course, and do take these data with a grain of salt. Nothing's certain. It's not as if these young Koreans are actually having children. Right. They're just more open to the idea. The Ministry of Gender Equality and Family released the findings after surveying people aged 12 or older across over 12,000 households nationwide from June 1st to July 31st. The survey shows there's been an increase in the number of young adults, especially in their 20s and 30s, expressing a desire to have children. More specifically, 27.6% of those in their 30s, 15.7% of those under 30 now plan to have children, up from previous years. The respondents willing to have children say they want to have 1.5 kids on average, but that's the same as 3 years ago. So no real change in the number of kids that these couples want to have. Concurrently, the percentage of those who don't plan to have children has actually decreased significantly as well. The survey also showed that women continue to bear a heavier burden regarding childcare and domestic chores. However, there is an emerging trend among young couples, with an increasing number opting to share these responsibilities equally. I know a lot of couples, and where sometimes, in some cases, the husband actually bears a lot of the lion's share of the household chores and childcare. But overall, in the grand scheme of things, and in generally speaking, it does seem, according to the survey anyway, that women do bear a heavier burden in that regard. And now the survey also notes that younger people now engage in more conversations with their spouses as well, contributing to healthier family dynamics.
That's and of promising. Course doing
yeah so
talk more health,
yeah talk more I mean you know
fight less
yeah fight less So there's been a kind of a concern that couples, you know, don't tend to talk and don't hold these conversations. And part of those conversations, of course, children could be involved as well. Now, most elementary students still attend academies after school, but the government assesses that the implementation of the so-called newborn school program might reduce this reliance as well. So that probably means that parents have more time with their kids as well, and it gives them more options to have children as well. But of course, there's always still a challenge. A significant portion of respondents reported insufficient personal time still due to work, highlighting ongoing challenges in balancing professional and family life. The ministry has vowed to adapt quickly to new family needs arising from demographic changes, such as, of course, low birth rates and an aging population. The goal is to implement family policies policies that ensure inclusivity and support for every member of society. That's what the government is pledging anyway. But yeah, interesting. I mean, young couples, I thought, you know, Gen Z are very independent and maybe don't want to have children. But doesn't seem to be so, according to the survey anyway. So is it a light at the end of the tunnel? Is it a silver lining? Faint and dim, but we'll have to see.
All right. We need to conduct these surveys anyway, just to gauge, are we making improvements? Where do we need to work? I mean, there are more promising parts of those stats, but manage your expectations because change is difficult. I mean, I think the reasons, the fundamental reasons why we don't want to have kids or delay marriage, those haven't been resolved. We're talking about unaffordable housing. We talk about inflation daily. These things don't help.
Yeah, I mean, just with the data of young couples willing to have children, and if they do eventually have children and the low birth rate does rebound, the other question is, will those children actually stay in the country? Will they go off to other countries, into greener pastures is another kind of headache and homework for the government as well.
A sort of a brain drain, if you will. I like how you're opening up a whole new discussion when I have to finish the segment. thanks.
A cliffhanger for next time, maybe.
I'll see you tomorrow for that. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.